thanks once again for downloading and listening to a podcast from Celtic Underground. We are in the 21st year and the 20th season of the world's longest running football fans podcast. You can subscribe by going to thecelticunderground.substack.com and you will get correspondence, articles, emails straight to your inbox. You can pay a little bit of money and you will get exclusive content straight to your inbox. And if you go online and look on our website, you can still, you don't need to be on the Substack app, you can get all the podcasts on your usual provider. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, saying enjoy the latest podcast.
Misery loves company. That's what the wise man said. The remedy.
I was just saying to Matthew and Stephen that this podcast was going to be a review of the game and then a preview of the cup final. But literally, I mean, I said to my wife over eating dinner, the reason my phone is exploding is because the SFA have just released the audio from the cup final that shows that Hearts have been a lunch of lying gits all week. So we're going to talk about that first, then we'll talk about the game, because it's not like it's a spoiler for everybody that you don't know what the outcome of the game was if we talk about the statement first. So, Matthew, our history, resident history expert, what do you make of the SFA, of the audio around the game event and what we've had to put up with for the past week? What do you think of it?
Well, I have to say, first of all, Brian, when you said that your phone was exploding, I had visions of your wife grabbing it like a Hearts player, throwing it on the ground and stamping on it, you know, in the park. So I very much hope that, you know, I very much hope that she didn't do that.
Oh, it's still in one piece.
I think the whole week's been very strange. If I'm being reasonable for the first part of this, because I always like to start with being reasonable, it's understandable if you lose a game, if you lose a league, in circumstances that Hearts did, you know, like literally within the last couple of minutes when I think they really believed they'd won, especially when they went 1-0 up, it's probably natural that people respond in a fairly, you know, angry, emotional way. And I think, to be brutally honest, I suspect if the scenario was reversed, you know, I don't think Celtic would have been, and that includes the fans in particular, I don't think we would have been all entirely reasonable about it. So, on the one hand, from a fan's perspective, I have some sympathy. You're angry. You want somewhere to vent that frustration, which is understandable. I think, though, the strange one has been the Hearts' official response, which, whilst it might link in with what fans want, it isn't necessarily what you would expect a serious organisation to engage in. The bit that struck me as strange, it wasn't actually the first statement. It was the statement from Hearts on Saturday night. But it was sort of what was clearly a holding statement saying, we're investigating this. And it came out obviously quite late at night. Now, here was what struck me as strange. They left at the end of the game. The Hearts team, quite famously now, literally grabbed their bags, jumped on their bus, didn't get changed, and drove back to Edinburgh. Now, I speak as somebody who has run, you know, various trips on transport and all the rest of it. Here's a really, really easy thing to do. You stand at the front of the bus and you say, right, can I have everyone's attention? And then you ask a question when everyone's paying attention. Now, the idea that Hearts at night didn't know if a player had been assaulted or not was strange. Surely all you had to do in the first place was get on the bus, on the way back to Tynecastle, Derek McInnes or whoever just stands at the front and says, right, lads, put your hand up if you were assaulted, we'll come and talk to you. The fact that hours after that bus journey, Hearts were putting out a statement going, well, we don't know, was just incredibly strange. And that's really set the tone for the statements ever since. Again, as I say, from a fan perspective, I can understand people being frustrated and annoyed. Given that we know Hearts earlier in the week were given the information that has now been made completely public about what actually happened, it just seems strange that they were putting out excuses. And it almost strikes, it's that old thing of, you're so angry, you need an outlet for it. So what we're going to do is, even though we know by tomorrow the full story will be out, we're just going to put an angry statement out now. Because by tomorrow, no one will care what the truth was. They'll just listen that we were angry today.
And on that, Stephen, in terms of how quickly that narrative of Hearts players being assaulted got out there, which could have only come from Hearts players. I'm in the north stand upper, directly opposite the tunnel. As Martin O'Neill said today, within 3 minutes the pitch was clear. Yeah. Celtic have timed it. I think it was something like 2 minutes 58 seconds or something like that. Within 3 minutes the pitch would have been playable, right? Then we get the trophy presentation. Okay, all of this takes a bit of time. And then the players start going round and they start in the main stand and then go around the Celtic end, whatever. I can never remember if it was Jockstein or Lifton Lions. They go around the Celtic end and then they came round to level with us. And then as soon as they left level with us, I then leave because, well, want to get away with my dad so that we can, you know, the majority of people are still in the stadium, so it'll be a bit easier. I don't need to watch them go around 20 times, right? So there's a reasonable amount of time, but it's not like half a day. By the time I got back to the car, Radio Scotland, you know, Brezhnev had died, level of somberness. Radio Scotland, it was all about the assaults that had taken place on Hearts players. That was the story of Radio Scotland thereafter, all the way home, more or less. Oh, and Celtic won the week. So they've been getting this narrative out from the minute, yet I know for certain by lunchtime Monday, Hearts had heard the audio that we've just heard. So what do you make of it?
It's just a team being bad losers. As Matthew said, yeah, you get emotional in the heat of the moment. It's very hard. You know, we've lost leagues in the last 10 minutes of a season. I remember it well. We've seen it happen. We've lost it on the last day. And it's very hard. Now, probably even harder for Hearts because they've waited 60 years and all the rest, or they've waited 40 years for the revenge on us. All of that. But it kind of strikes me as very... It was almost like there was echoes of Rapid Vienna. Remember when Rapid Vienna left and the players were all heads wrapped in bandages and all that? There was all of that nonsense, like, you know, players being... You could clearly see. Because the amount... Everybody nowadays, everything is filmed so much. So you've got all the Sky cameras. We've got about 10 different angles of Callum Osmond's goal. So not one of those cameras saw anything other than, you know, other than the goal. I just think it almost suited Hearts to then play the victim card. Like, my son's up at uni in Liverpool. He was studying at the weekend, despite me telling him to go to the pub and watch the game. So he was in the library. He had the game on the radio. And he texted me afterwards. He's, geez, Dad. And it's a kid that's brought up in Cardiff, so he doesn't know Radio Scotland. He's like, oh my God, Radio Scotland is just Huns, is it? They weren't happy about... So he's almost, I wouldn't say he's a neutral, obviously he's biased, but he's listening to that, thinking, why are they not talking about Celtic winning the league, the comeback, you know, all the other stuff, which was the story, you know, and it's got out there, and some people, see Roy Keane's talking about it, and Neville, and I mean, right, but actually, the rest of the week, all we've had to listen to is Hearts being denied this opportunity, and it's just, you know, they had the opportunity, they didn't take it, do you know, that...
And you know better than us, Matthew, about games being stopped for pitch invasions and things like that. But it was someone at Celtic put it quite well to me that there's sort of three elements to a pitch invasion. There's fans on the pitch, or to fans being on the pitch. There's fans being on the pitch, which is completely celebratory. That's sort of level one. There's fans being on the pitch and doing some goading. That's level two. And there's fans being on the pitch and committing assault. And his point to me was, we maybe had 1% of our attendees on the park. And of them, maybe 1% of them were doing the goading and going up to Hearts players. But none of them were doing the assaulting. The only assaulting that has taken place in recent years in Scottish football has been Celtic staff assaulted on the Ibrox pitch. And Neil Lennon assaulted at Tynecastle. And Martin O'Neill today has tripped off some pitch invasions that have happened in games. So, I mean, just in general, what's your thoughts about the principle of people going on the pitch and pitch invasion, Matthew?
I'll be absolutely frank. I absolutely hate pitch invasions. I know people go, it's euphoric, it's people showing emotion. I couldn't care less. Pitches are for players. They're not for fans. It's not. There's no complication. Stay off the park. If you're not wearing a green and white hoop shirt, that the actual, I don't mean it was bought in the shop, that you were given by, you know, the Celtic coaching team beforehand, don't go in the park. That's my personal view. I didn't like it when fans went on, partly because I knew the minute fans streamed on, I knew that the narrative of what should have been a completely remarkable moment, you know, that thing of, as you've said, all the angles of Osmond edging towards the goal, it's just brilliant and it's just iconic. And yes, it was a brilliant thing, but there's no question that it's allowed people to muddy the waters. Going on the park achieved nothing. It didn't create some brilliant scenes. It didn't achieve anything. So I can't stand people going on the park, and I don't want to see it happening in any circumstance. There's, however, an awful lot of nonsense being spoke in the past few days that seems to imagine that Celtic fans have gone on the park and this has never, ever, ever happened before in any other club, in any other country, anywhere at any point in football. And it's nonsense. How often do we see it where you know, the clubs themselves embrace pitch invasions and look at the emotion and the media is happy to celebrate it? So, yeah, absolutely, let's criticise. But I think there's a real irony. People often speak about the irony for Hearts of the 60s and the 80s. So, of course, famously, you might well know, but when Kilmarnock won the league, they won it just ahead of Hearts. And it was goal average rather than goal difference. And Hearts were really, really didn't like the fact it was goal average rather than goal difference. And so they protested, and they were amongst the people that got it changed to goal difference. And then in 1986, we win the league on goal difference, but Hearts would have won the league on goal average. You can envisage what's going to happen now. A rule is going to get brought in about points deductions for a pitch invasion, and that's what's going to cost Hearts their next league challenge, you know. Because on the very last day when they beat us or whoever they beat at some point, somebody's going to run on the park and that's going to get taken away. I'll make a final point. I mean, I think there's a big question. I know it's one of these, if you ever watched Yes Minister, the programme, you know, one of the favourite phrases on it, something must be done, this is something, therefore it must be done. And I think the problem with pitch invasions, everybody comes out and it all sounds great to say any pitch invasion should result in stand closures and, more importantly, point deductions. And that's fine, and I can do that. But that actually is a huge Pandora's box. So, for example, what counts as a pitch invasion? Does one person count as a pitch invasion? Does 10? Is it 100? You know, if 100 people in a crowd of 1,000 run on the park, is that worse than 200 people running on a crowd at 60,000? And I think you open yourself up to all these questions that on the face of it sound great, but become very, very confusing. And as ever, with a lot of the people that are using these, yeah, I think if you said just now, Celtic are going to get a stand close, Celtic are going to get points deducted, they'd be delighted. If we turned around, though, let's say, for example, let's say St Mirren is staying up, obviously, in the playoff, or Partick, it doesn't really matter, but let's say St Mirren or Partick, and in the last minute, somebody scores the winning goal to, you know, either keep their side or put their side in at the top league, and people run on the park. I'm willing to bet the comment will be, look at the excitement, look at the, you know, the elation. It won't be, aren't pitch invasions terrible? Even though I personally think they are.
And I agree, and that's always the problem of, it's why populist politicians get into power and then are shit when they're in power, because answers are easy until you have to put them into play, you know. So the St Mirren Thistle playoff, last minute goal. What happens if there's a rush of people from the back forward just out of they've fallen over, and that makes the people at the front spill out, and they're not particularly of desire to get onto the park, but it's a safety issue to get on the park. It just starts to become nonsense. And Keith, you missed the beginning of it, but getting on to Matthew's point and Stephen's point about Radio Scotland being sombre. So yesterday, I know, because I'm a sad man and we've all done these types of things, I listened to the Radio Scotland podcast. I listened to the first 10 minutes of, you know, the Radio Scotland podcast. You know how after a game, there's sort of two podcasts, after a weekend, there's two podcasts. There's one that's done immediately after the game where it's basically, it starts at the audio from the final whistle of whatever game they were doing live commentary, and then it's that, and then they do another one the next morning. So I listened to that one. And straight away, it's a somberness about the pitch invasion, and we don't want to see these scenes, and this is a repeat of the cup quarter final. This is not what we want in Scottish football. It's a disgrace, right? Then I went on to BBC Sounds, put on Five Live, Conor McNamara's commentary on it. It couldn't be more different. His commentary is the joy of what an incredible game, and it sums up an incredible season in Scottish football that up until 3 minutes from full time, Hearts are winning the league. Actually, Hearts had a free kick in the last minute of injury time and their keeper goes up, that if they'd scored from it, they would have won the league and Celtic run it. It was the joy of the uncertainty and that. Is it just me that feels that Scottish media has been utterly devastating? So it's they've enjoyed joining in this false narrative of Hearts.
Absolutely. So, first of all, apologies for being late. I was cleaning all the...
You're fine, 3 points for that.
I was cleaning the turf off my trainers from being on the pitch on Saturday there. I don't know if he's covered any of that. You know, we managed to hold back. We enjoyed the view from the stand. It was much better up there. I think it's for the media, especially, they're going through a mourning period of lost stories that they were desperate to tell, where this new club had separated Celtic and Rangers, had overtaken Celtic and Rangers, this big bad Celtic that's been dominating Scottish football for the past 20 years, especially since the turn of this century. That's where it seems like the loss and the dourness is coming from. And it's wonderful because it kind of justifies us and why we as fan media are so important, because it kind of set our own narratives. We're not an echo chamber. There are so many different types of fan media, so different voices, but it's also different from what's in the mainstream. And the stories that they would love to tell, everybody was interested in Scottish football in England, who usually look down the nose at us, all over the world. I saw people being interviewed in American sports. I think Brazil had commentary off the game as well. As you mentioned, Conor McNamara's commentary was wonderful. But that's what we should be celebrating, the drama of that last day, and how had Hearts, who it wasn't their fault that they put in a terrible cross that couldn't get past Callum McGregor, the very first man defending it, had Hearts actually put a decent ball in, there could have been even more drama swinging their way. But it didn't go that way. It went our way. We were calm under pressure, as we'd been for the past seven games. We kept going to the very, very end. 58 minutes and 7 seconds, I believe, we took it to. And we created a bit of magic for everybody that was inside that stadium. And my heart goes to all the people that were at weddings and first communions and couldn't make it to the game. We were there, we saw it, we experienced it, and we're never going to forget that. But that is another story that could be spun, that could be told, just how magical things can be at Celtic Park on special occasions, on pressure occasions, like Saturday was. And it was wonderful.
Well, so we've done enough talking about Hearts and their statements. Stephen, the game itself, where were you? Where were you watching?
Firstly, apologies if you see me looking out the window. We've got a bee swarm in the garden. And the bee man has just turned up to catch the bees and put them. He's got a big white suit on. It looks like it's pretty exciting out there. But anyway, this is more important. Saturday, it was a funny one. We've talked about all the games leading up to now, and all we need to do is win. And yeah, I thought Saturday we're going to turn up and we'll win. I thought we'd win far more comfortably than we ended up winning, but it was no less enjoyable for that. Even when Hearts scored, it was like a decent time. There was still plenty of time to go. You know, if they'd have scored in the second half, you'd be more worried. But, you know, still time to go. We equalised so quickly. That knocked a wind out of them, I think. We got that goal back straight away, and it was a penalty, despite the fact that they'll say, you know, they'll find a reason that that wasn't a penalty. It was. And then it was funny. I didn't realise until afterwards how close to the end when Maeda scored. Because we were in the pub. Pub is very busy. The time is up in the pub. You know, there was a lot of Guinness empty glasses on the table. And when we scored, it was like, geez, there's only 2 minutes to go or 3 minutes to go. It was like, and then people knock VAR because you can't celebrate the moment. Actually, on Saturday, it was really good because we celebrated the goal. Then it was called off. So you have that little deflation bit. Then you have the review again. And of course, we're all looking and everybody's going, oh, he's definitely on. He's going to give this. So actually, you got to celebrate the goal twice. So it was almost better because the second celebration was better than the first one. And as you say, Hearts had the chance. You know, I think they played very negatively all day. They came to not lose. And actually, you know yourself, whenever Celtic try and do that, we always mess it up. I think had Hearts came and went at us, they might have got a better result. But that's their manager. And for all the talk this season, I had one English pundit during the week saying, Hearts have played fantastic football, you know, blah, blah, blah. They haven't. They played football that wins matches. That's, you know, don't knock it. Arsenal have done the same to win their title. Sorry, Keith. You know, Atletico Madrid do the same to win games. Some people win games different ways. But they've not played great football. Motherwell played great football. Hearts haven't. So, yeah, they kind of got what they deserved. You know, and the third goal was just like, yeah, icing on the cake. That was like running out the pub, down the street, round the church, back in. You know, it was just, yeah, complete bedlam in Cardiff. It was mental.
And Matthew, your experience of the day, how did you feel when Hearts took the lead and then with their penalty? And then, I'm with Stephen, by the way. There's a lot of it reminds me of sort of 1988, where in 1980, it's only afterwards in 1988 that I realised how close it was to the final whistle. And I don't know whether it was, you knew there was going to be 7, 8, 9 minutes of injury time, so you knew there was still quite a bit of game time to be played. But anyway, what was your thoughts? How did you go through the day?
No, it was hectic, to say the least. I wasn't universally popular. It was actually my daughter's first Holy Communion in the morning, which I went to. I wouldn't have dreamt of missing that. I can see her in the corner of my eye just now, and she's waving excitedly on the basis that she's, you know, mentioned. Then we had the after party, which I didn't go to because I went to the game. I mean, I'll be brutally frank. I wouldn't have missed the first Holy Communion. I wouldn't have. But there was no prospect I was going to a family party and missing a game of this magnitude. I mean, as I said, on the podcast, you know, the last time I was on, this is comfortably the biggest domestic game at Celtic Park in 3 decades. You could even argue a case for almost 5 decades in the sense, you know, 1979 is the last time that for our last game of the league season, we could win the league. So, I mean, this is a game for the ages. This is like one of the ones that decades from now people can look back on. And it's a massive one there. So basically, I did First Holy Communion. I left my house. I'm not sure how I managed this, but I left my house 45 minutes before kickoff. I still had a fair bit to drive. I ended up parking about 2 or 3 miles away from the ground and running. And I made kickoff. And I was amazed because I thought, oh, I'm going to miss kickoff. And we didn't. So we were in for that. As an aside, when we get to the end of the game, I then went home for my other daughter's 13th birthday. So it was a day of activity. To me, I'll be brutally honest with you. You know, Stephen said that he knew that we would win. He turned up expecting to win. So did I. But I knew within seconds that we would score a late goal, and at no point was I worried. And I'll be honest, the reason is I have this sort of belief. I know it's not entirely true, but I sort of have this half belief in football and karma. And football and karma works in a very simple way. If you time waste at the start, you lose late goals. That's how the footballing gods punish you, that if you, you know, deliberately from the start seek to waste time, then they go, that's fine, you waste as much time as you want. What we're going to do is, though, with not much time left, we're going to let the other team score. Now, Hearts, from the very start, every throw in was taken about, you know, 40, 45 seconds to take. I've never, I don't think, seen a trainer on the park quite as often, you know, like a physio on the park quite as often as there was. I appreciate, for one of them, the guy that the Hearts player that I presume pulled his hamstring or whatever. But the rest, it was just every time, if there was a reason to go down and lie down, that was what happened. Either that was, I think it was actually Ross previously pointed out that was the first time Hearts had played midweek and then Saturday for quite some time. So maybe there was a fitness issue with them. But I just felt that because they were time wasting from the start, as long as we were level, which of course, there would have been that slight issue. If you'd been getting beat with 5 minutes to go, that would have been different. But as long as we were level, it didn't occur to me that we wouldn't score a late goal for that reason. And Stephen touched on it as well, but I actually think the big story that hasn't come out of, that hasn't really come from, is Denny McInnes messed it up. Celtic, let's not, Martin O'Neill's done an absolutely brilliant job, but this is still a weak Celtic team. It's a Celtic team that's improved over the last few weeks. As somebody said, it's a bit like that extra time against St Mirren reminded them they were a Celtic team. But this is a Celtic team that are still vulnerable at the back, that at times, you know, still have, can be overrun, can be, you know, if you play a stronger team. Now, Hearts came and they sat back. The strategy, which I suppose in fairness in the first half worked, was just sit back, give the ball to Austin Trusty and let him run almost the entire length of the park. Don't challenge him under any circumstances. Let him come as far as he wants. And I suppose that worked in the first half. But in the second half, you just felt it was the very definition of playing with fire. Hearts were saying to Celtic, have as many shots as you want, have as many attacks as you want. We're not really going to press you. Some people have suggested that, well, Hearts, you know, hoped later on to bring on substitutes that were going to change the dynamic. I think, though, if you play so negatively for the first 60, 70 minutes, it becomes psychologically very difficult to move yourself into the idea, now we're going to attack and get into it. And I think that because of all the other noise that's gone around, nobody's really discussing the fact that I think McInnes messed up. And if I'm being honest, I think a lot of McInnes's frustration, I personally think there's every chance he'll be gone by Christmas. I think if Hearts don't have a good start next season, there's no way Tony Bloom, you know, if Hearts had done what they expected to do this season and finished third or fourth, I think Tony Bloom might have got rid of Derek McInnes and brought in somebody more in, perhaps a slightly bigger name, somebody more in the Bloom style. Because of how close Hearts came, that's given McInnes a bit longer. But a bit like Claudio Ranieri with Leicester, who actually won it, I think if they don't have a great start to the season, I'm not convinced they'll see Halloween, and certainly not Santa. But we'll see.
Ryan, there's no sound.
How long have you been doing this?
I know. So, Keith, I was going to say, I think there was something that what Matthew was talking about there. McInnes's tactics, in another way, contributed to us winning the game, that allowed Martin to make a change, and that his tactic of man-mark Celtic's midfield, let Trusty have the ball, because he doesn't know what to do with it, that when then Martin decides to go to a back three, that then, and really it was effectively a back two, because he's got the comfort of knowing, well, firstly, he needs to go for it, right? But he's got the comfort of going for a back two, but it then frees Sarachi up to do the one thing that Trusty wouldn't do, which is Sarachi effectively turned into a second number 10, but a deeper line number 10 and picking the ball and running. And because Hart's tactic was, you want to mark the midfield and just sit back, it then meant Celtic had an extra player who was just running through. But we'll get back to the game itself. My only irritation with the nature of the Hearts goal was, how can we allow Hearts' main striker to go unmarked at a corner kick at the back post when both the goals that Hearts scored against us at Tynecastle were balls to the back post that they then knocked back across?
Yeah. He's also scored at Celtic Park at the back post as well.
Yeah, that's been one of their tactics all season, balls to the back post. So, one, were you as confident as Stephen and Matthew that we were going to win this game all the way through? And tell us about your day. Did you have to park your car 3 miles away and run all the way?
Thankfully not, no. Thankfully Airbus was in plenty of time. Road seemed quieter. I think everybody was in the stadium, again, really, really early. So Airbus had quite a smooth journey down and dropped us off the bowling club, or the old bowling club in London Road, and we managed to make our way into the stadium. At no point did I feel nervous about us getting over the line. The performance and how it was going to go, I thought it's going to be tight. I didn't think we were going to run away with it. I didn't think it was going to be done early. Always had the feeling, I've mentioned this to you guys, that the first half was just about sizing each other up, staying with them. And then the second half is where, towards the end, is where I thought it was going to, that's where the magic was going to happen. And maybe a wee bit contrary to everybody else, I thought Hearts stifled us really, really well in the first half. I don't remember us having many chances in the first half, but the best thing that's happened in recent weeks is that the crowd, even though some people were quite nervous, we stayed with the team. There was no one getting on anyone's backs, really, even until late in the game. Hearts going man for man and not letting anybody get much space on the ball, trusted bringing it forward, but then just getting so far and then just having a mind blank and not actually knowing who to pass to, where to go. People maybe hiding a wee bit. We talk about Negrin. He was showing up for the ball quite a lot, but he wasn't doing it in dangerous areas. He wasn't doing it high up the pitch. He was doing it with all the play in front of him. And I felt Hearts kind of managed us quite well. The fact that they scored the goal, and as we said, getting the equaliser so quickly and going into half-time, I think that was a massive, massive psychological blow to them, which was great. The game itself, yeah, I just felt as if something was going to happen. It was going to happen late on. It was whether we could make the substitutions that we wanted to. I think, Matthew, it was yourself that put on, or Ross had put on the teams that we were all choosing, and I had put on Ralston to start. It was because I wanted our strongest players ready for that second half. I wanted AJ to see all the way through to the end of the game. The fact that he stayed on, and as you said, Sriracha coming on, kind of playing a wee nod to Nancy Ball with those three at the back.
Yeah.
That was a lovely wee nod, wee Easter egg back to him and the attacking football. But the bravery of Martin and the other coaches on there to actually put that to Hearts, who had already made all their substitutions. I love that they wasted a substitution within a minute of the second half to deal with Iheanacho coming on. They're not aware that he's not warming up at half time, that he's ready to come on and make that decision. That was a massive, massive cock up by them. The fact that they had to waste a substitution on that, and then, as you said, the guy with the hamstring, that was him down to the only final substitution where they could bring on the three players. And that's where it felt it was starting to turn in our tide, because, as you said, we knew there was going to be lots of minutes added on. The energy that they were putting in to stop us with our movement, and the guys were still stretching them about the park, it felt as if we were going to just be able to grind them down. Sriracha was a surprise to me. We know that you guys could going forward. It just seemed as if he was determined to make a difference on Saturday. He knew that he was going to get on, maybe in his last game for us at Celtic Park, but he wanted to make sure that he was a very bright footnote in that game. He was gliding past players who were tiring for the Hearts side, and he was getting into dangerous positions, but he wasn't turning back. He was happy to make the dangerous pass, but it wasn't, didn't feel like he was forcing it. Some players, when they get that high, he had the experience where he knew he'd play the ball, but he was going to keep it in. And the ball through to Osman for Maeda's goal was absolutely stunning. The run, you talked about it, celebrating it twice. I jumped up first, yes, got a wee half celebration. But where I was in the stand, diagonally over it, I could see that the linesman had raised his flag. I actually sat down while everybody else was still on their feet all around me. I'm like, no, it's offside. They're not going to give it. It was Keir, my oldest, sitting stand beside me, saying he's looking up at the boxes behind us, and they're all starting to celebrate. Kevin Bridges and his family are up behind us, and they're all celebrating. That's when you kind of knew something was happening. And the anticipation was gradually growing around the stadium. The players could see it. You could see the dugout was getting excited. But it wasn't until Don Robertson actually pointed to the centre circle for us to get that goal. The energy and the excitement around the whole stadium was just absolutely superb. One other thing I should have mentioned this earlier, that penalty. I've never heard Celtic Park go so quiet and then so loud in such a short space of time. It was like a shotgun blast, the noise level in that stadium. Just when we are pushing together as a stadium, my fans and the team as one, there's nothing holding us back, and that must have shocked them to their core. Wonderful stuff. Loved it.
Stephen, one of the things that, a couple of things that you talked about there. One, I mean, you've mentioned the celebrating the goal twice. Again, one of the narratives that hasn't come out of this is, despite everything that's been said in Scottish football the 3 or 4 days before this, because we got a handball against Motherwell, thank God for VAR. Otherwise, for the next 50 years, one of the biggest talking points in Scottish football could have been how Celtic were denied the title by a man being called offside when he was 6 or 7 yards onside. It was so bad, they didn't even bother drawing the second line I mean, that's how bad the VAR decision was. You're watching it on the telly. I'm looking across at the dugout, the Celtic dugout. I'm saying this is getting given because look at the dugout. The dugout's in no doubt that this is onside. I mean, I don't even think it's close the way the dugout's behaving here. So you're watching it on the telly. Was it you pretty straight away thinking this is going to be given?
Yeah, it was one of those when he called it. You thought, oh, it's Maeda they've called because Maeda's off, but then he's coming back. So you think, okay, the new rule, and we're all the rules are different rules from 20 years ago. Maeda's not offside because he's not in the play. So Osmendi's flying in. He's miles on. So we were all like, we kind of celebrated the goal, deflation from the goal being flagged offside. But then when you see the replay, we're all like, we're ready. We know he's going to give it. It's like, the boys are moving the pints away from the edge of the table so that we can go again. It was very much like that. There will be no pints spilled. Yeah, it was obvious it was going to begin. But as you say, like, there's been a lot of talk about, conspiracy thing at the weekend, and people were talking about, VAR is terrible, we should scrap it, we should get rid of it. Nonsense. A poor version of VAR, which is what we have, is still better than no VAR. We don't have the camera angles, we don't have the money that they have in England, and they still make mistakes. Arsenal should have a guy sent off the other night, possibly. So there's always an element of objectivity to it. But when it comes to something factual, VAR is very important. And they get more right than they get wrong. And we've had, if you look over the course of the season, I think Hearts have had a lot of decisions go in their favour. We've not had half as many. Rangers probably haven't had half as many as Hearts. We always used to get told when we moaned, it evens out. It's evened out, but you're telling us you don't like that. What you mean is it evens out, eventually you'll get some. You're that throwing in the 1989 Cup final that you got away with. Do you know that they want that match can replayed as well? And that you go back to the handball on Wednesday night, that was a penalty. I'm fed up with people saying it wasn't a penalty. He handled it. That's it, end of fucking story. Just accept it. And I think that's, you said it today, Keith, that was when the origin story started. I don't know, I think McInnes has been spoiling for a fight all season. He'd done it with Aberdeen players, he had a go at Hibs fans, United fans. He's been quite classless all season. That's his way, which is fine. It kind of bit him at the weekend. And they just didn't like it. And Martin's bit him again today.
It kind of shows you McInnes's mentality was to go there, stifle us, and try and sneak something. They really, really should have went for it.
Yeah.
Goals would have won them the game. And just bring back to the Ange Postecoglou, I'm sure he had a quote about if it was a cup final tomorrow, how would he want his team to play? And that's how you play all the time. He's tried to chop and change, maybe outthink himself. Got myself into a corner. Not starting Braga was a boost for us. Even if he is coming on as a substitute late in the game, that was undoubtedly a boost for Celtic, and it backfired for Hearts.
So Matthew, one of the things I always dream of in a big game that's really tight is that right at the end, you get a goal that means the stress can all just disappear before the game finishes. I mean, we've all watched it probably 100 times. But the fact that we as supporters got to celebrate for about 20 seconds because we knew we were winning the league of just watching Callum Osmond run it. I mean, my only concern was that he tries to hit it too early. Because I'm just thinking, just keep running. I mean, don't stop running until you hit the back of the net, mate, with this ball. Just keep running. It's magic, isn't it, to have such a last-minute winner, Matthew? The second it fell to him, did you think that's it? Or were you waiting for him to get to the edge of their box?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny bringing up last-minute winners. I'm still looking for a ticket for the final, so I'm hoping there's going to be a last-minute, akin to what Osmond did, but I think it was brilliant. Yeah, it was such a strange moment because I think if you watch it, Iheanacho is clearly coaching him. And I think that's part of the reason he doesn't rush it, because I think he's clearly getting told, you've got loads and loads of time. There is no rush. Take it in. I think I there was two thoughts I had as he went in. I really did think, for the love of God, don't miss it. I had visions of him trying to do something, you know, particularly smart or clever. I was glad he just did the professional thing, got in as close as he could, didn't blast it, didn't try and do something, you know, which gets you on a sort of a blooper video for all eternity, you know.
A Van Vossen.
Well, that's exactly it. I think I was glad he did exactly what he was supposed to do, which was great. Although I did see one comment online from someone saying that he should be fined, because if ever there was a chance to sort of stop the ball on the line, get down and knock it in with your head.
Yeah.
You know, that was the crucial moment. It's actually interesting because I saw somebody, you know, responded jokingly, but somebody said, oh, well, surely if he'd put his head down that low, he would have, at that point in time, you know, the referee could have disallowed it because you're not allowed to put your head low. That's really dangerous. But we've established, Hearts have established this, that it's okay to have your head low in the box and you get penalties for it, in fact, you know, even if people try and... So, yeah, it was just a great moment. And I think, as you say, you watch it again. Is one of those... I think for the Hearts players, it's quite funny because I suppose it's the reverse of what Celtic felt. It's that horror moment. There's that split second when you watch it again, you just see the Hearts team go... No, they know that that's it done. Even if he had missed it, the reality was there wasn't really time that Hearts were going to equalise. I think if you were a Hearts player, you'd be really annoyed at the guy that took the free kick. I mean, for a professional footballer, that was an absolutely terrible free kick.
Bittle, mm-hmm. I think.
It's literally, basically the last kick of the ball. This is, you've played all season, you've played since last August. This is your last opportunity to do anything. And he couldn't beat the first man. And you just, I think, again, these things will all get lost in amongst all the other noise. But if I'm a Hearts fan, I'm annoyed at a terrible free kick. I'm annoyed at my manager for poor tactics. But from a Celtic perspective, it was great. It just fell absolutely perfectly. And I think it's the way that everyone, I think almost the other slight worry I'd had, although I suppose a lot of this is retrospective thinking back, but when it happens, it's almost like the Celtic team don't know what's happened. I know there was been all these jokes online about how, oh, he was offside because, you know, he got played, he was the sort of the last man. But I think there is that, but I think the Celtic team for a split second sort of goes, can we do this? Is, you know, and I actually thought the referee was going to blow. I thought there was an element where the referee might have just gone, do you know what, that's it, that was Hart's pretty much last chance, I'm just going to blow. And of course, we know you don't have to blow whistles for games to actually end. So maybe he did. I just wonder if other people can do this just now. I often make a joke when it comes to in my day job in teaching history, we sometimes look at the story of Robert the Bruce. And I always tell a story about how, you know, when Bruce is crowned King of Scotland, he just does it himself. You know, he goes to Scone Palace. He doesn't have most of the items or people that are supposed to have, but him and his pals just crown him King of Scotland. And I often say, well, I'm going to just do that. I'm just going to go to Scone myself one day and announce that I'm now the King of Scotland. And I wonder if this will now start happening with referees. It'll just be like, I don't need to whistle. You know, I just, from now on, as long as in my head I have said something, that will do. So,
yeah. I think it was my thoughts were very similar to Conor McNamara's commentary, that there's no winning goals. It felt as if it was an eternity for him to get there. The running up the park, just had a glance up and I was waiting to see if there was anyone Hearts had kept back. Indeed, they hadn't. It was just a brilliant feeling that you knew it was going to go in. I was actually a little bit disappointed. Like you said, maybe going for the header from on the goal line would have been a bit much, but I was hoping for more like the Nadir Shifty finish at Ibrox when he was playing for Dundee United with the arms out, just run it in, really, really sickening them. That would have been a wee bit more memorable than what he did, but the moments that came after us, the celebrations, the outpouring of just relief and joy was just magic. It was brilliant. My favourite things about going to football, see the hugs you get from strangers whenever you score goals like that. These are people that you kind of nod to high and all that, but it's some of the most deepest, beautifulest hugs that you get, and especially when you're sitting with family members beside you. So me and the wee man had a fantastic day. It was wonderful. I don't know. I was kind of thinking, is he going to try and lay off to somebody? Is that where the offside was going to come from there? But I'm glad that he just took it in, sealed the day, and started the celebrations in style. It was a wonderful thing. I'm like you guys, I don't know how the match was called to an end, and I'm glad the SFA have since released the audio of what actually happened and clarified the IFAB rulings that you don't actually need to blow the whistle, which I've been having great debates with one of my friends who's an amateur Scottish referee, who says that you definitely need to blow the whistle to bring the game to a halt. I'm glad that's been clarified, and I'm glad that they're actually teaching very, very well to all our referees throughout Scotland the rules of the game. But it was a fitting way to bring the game and the season to a close, with us just doing enough and Hearts just faltering. As you said, that cross was woeful.
I remember one of the things that used to bug me about, in terms of not needing to blow to end the game, one of the things that used to bug me about Hugh Dallas, because I always thought it was about his ego. In big games, Hugh Dallas never blew the final whistle. Hugh Dallas would walk over to the ball, pick the ball up, put it under his arm, and then signal that the game was over. You know, there's Hugh Dallas. Hugh Dallas never used to blow big games. He always used to stick the ball under his arm and point off. So yes, it was fantastic. And Matthew, I think you touched on something there. Actually, the first thought that was going through my mind as he started crossing the halfway line was actually more the principle of, well, even if he somehow manages to muck this up, there's not enough time for Hearts to go back up the field and score. That was actually the first thing that was going through my head. So that's the game. And as Keith said, the joy at the final whistle was just incredible. I do wonder what condition the Celtic squad have been in this week, certainly Monday, Tuesday of this week. But we've got a cup final to come. And Stephen,
It's good to see that we've not seen any pictures or videos of people hanging from the girders of any nightclubs. That's good to see.
Yeah, and actually, although they were out, they actually don't look like they were completely out of it. So there does appear to be some professionalism there. So Stephen, what's your expectations? There's a part of me says, look, it's Dunfermline. They didn't even get to the playoffs. We should be able to beat them. Another part of me says, one thing about Neil Lennon, he was always able to get Celtically well tactically set up for a one-off game. Obviously, you know, Barcelona being the most famous. So what's your expectation for Saturday, Stephen? Thanks for downloading and listening to this podcast. However, if you are a paid subscriber, keep listening. There's more of the podcast left.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision. And also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.